understanding what goes on in a child's brain relieves a little of the tension some parents feel, but it still leaves you with the problems of how you should respond. As we continue, Scott and Joanne probe a little further into what is happening in the parent of the child who is a challenge to parent.
The emotions felt by a parent who has attention deficit are quite intense at times. We find that one of the main emotions these parents feel is a tremendous sense of fatigue. They're just worn out and don't know how to address some of the stuff. We want to be careful that you don't waste a lot of your time trying to blame yourself for the problems your children are facing. Yes, you have an influence on your children, but you don't want to go overboard and be plagued with guilt and self-condemnation for the situation that your child's in. That's not going to help the process. We want to help you to develop some positive outlook and some positive solutions for your children.
There are a number of things that parents can do to either help or hinder their children through this process and in dealing with their weaknesses in the whole process of growth and development. Children who are difficult to parent have certain needs in the whole parenting process. So what we want to give you today as parents is a opportunity to evaluate yourself, to evaluate your own parenting, and to understand, some of the ways that you interact with your child, the way that you initiate and interact there. There's some things that you can do in the process that can be either helpful or hurtful. So we're going to look at some of those things. Then we're going to help you to understand some ways that maybe you can change the environment in your family to be more helpful. We're going to give you some practical ideas, some things that you can do to help your children develop the skills that they need.
Children who have attention deficit often don't grow out of it, but they learn how to cope with it. We find that many of these children have some strengths that are latent strengths. They can't be seen because of the dominance of the negative traits that they're demonstrating. We're going to help you find ways of setting up your family so that those strengths can be maximized. If these children with attention deficit or other challenging problems are not addressed, they grow up and they live in families where there's poor relationship with a spouse, there's poor job performance, they pass on more problems to their children. We can stop the negative cycle that happens in a child's life by equipping them. What many of these children need is someone to lovingly come alongside of them and retrain them, help them overcome their weaknesses, see life in a different perspective. Coming alongside of them can help them to thrive as adults. But these children need some extra help. And we're going to give you some very practical advice for ways that you can do this in your own family. Much of what we're going to say is just good parenting technique. In fact, anyone who has a child would benefit from listening to these talks, because we're teaching some very specific, practical parenting advice. But those parents who have children who are a challenge to parent need to be reminded all the more. They need to spend as much attention to their parenting as possible. In fact, if you want to do your children a favor, you'll become an expert at parenting. Know what to do and how to respond at any given situation. The more you spend working on your own parenting, the better off your children will be. They need that gift from you in doing just that. Well, we've spent some time now talking about some of the causes of the behavior that our children have that's challenging. And we want to spend just a few minutes allowing you to ask some questions. We'll discuss just a little bit before we proceed to our next part of this talk. Yes?
I have a question on ADD and the testing of it. What is the appropriate age that a child should actually be thought of to be tested?
That's a good question. Usually what we say is that children who are 5 years and younger exhibit those symptoms anyway. You're not going to find out a lot. If you're going to try to diagnose a child who's very young with attention deficit, they have to have extreme behaviors. Okay, so it becomes difficult to diagnose it. Usually these children are picked up somewhere between 7, 8 years old when they're in school. They're not fitting in with everyone else. It's those children that it becomes more clear. Now, some try to diagnose attention deficit at a very young age, but I again want to warn all of us that children who are young are impulsive. They have a hard time following instructions, and so their activities have to be quite extreme for us to diagnose it at a young age. Certainly we can diagnose it even at an older age than that. And so when my father was recognizing that one of his sons, my brother, was having a hard time in high school and they diagnosed him as attention deficit, my dad said as an adult, now I understand why I've had all these problems all these years. So sometimes it's diagnosed much later too. Okay, someone else. Yes.
What are some of the side effects of Ritalin or other medication?
The two main side effects of Ritalin is a decreased appetite and a decreased ability to sleep. So those are the big ones. There are some other things that maybe particular to your particular child, but those are the main concerns with Ritalin that can really affect a young child. Often young children don't eat very well anyway, and then you give them Ritalin, and it really takes away their appetite. And so you have a real problem with nutrition for that child. They come kind of at risk nutritionally when they're on Ritalin. Also, it messes up their sleep patterns, and that can be regulated some by when you give the dose and how much dose, but it certainly needs to be taken into account.
Yes. Suzanne?
Yes. As you define the four different types of children, is it possible, or is it, you find it's normal, whatever, to have. I see one a little bit
everything myself. Sure. And we just tried to characterize four children, but there are many characteristics that are true of many of these children, and they come in different amounts in different children. You know, every child is different, and they take, you know, this characteristic and that characteristic. They have this weakness and that weakness, and they come as a unique person. So we just tried to make it clear in that way. But yeah, there's certainly a mix. Your child is not going to be just the Energizer Rabbit. They're going to have kind of a mix and match of these qualities, definitely. Yes.
You have mentioned that ADD children use less glucose. What about diet?
Diet.
It's not that, yeah, it's just that there's less glucose utilized during the thinking function, is all we're saying. There's not a problem with the glucose level in their body, but this study was just showing that less of it is being used when they're thinking. Therefore, something less is happening because they're using up less.
Is there anything like diet, a specific diet? Is there read somewhere that maybe a diet?
Children definitely respond to diet differently, and some of these behavior problems are a result of diets, some allergy problems. There are a lot of things that certainly affect the chemicals in the brain, different diets. So it's a very complicated study, and it's not the same for every child. We can't just say if a child has this problem, if they would just eat more carbohydrates, they'd be fine. It's not that simple. But sure. Protein increases your ability to focus, just in anybody. So if you're going to have a child who struggles like this, you want to make sure they get protein in the morning before they go to school. The protein is helpful for that, for anybody. So it's great to be sensitive to those kind of issues, but it also is not going to eliminate the problem.
It's just, as an adjunct.
Definitely. I think it's definitely helpful to look at those issues. Another thing that people see, when they see that, well, I think we all commonly think of sugar. If you give your child too much sugar, they have a hard time focusing. But really, the carbohydrates are metabolized the same way, so too much carbohydrates also decreases the ability to focus. So you really want to balance out the carbohydrates with the protein.
The child who sticks their foot out, who did that before they thought, it's a attention that they did before they thought the consequence, but what made them think to put their foot out? There was some thought to get the foot.
This sure. is in nature.
That's behavioral characteristics then.
Well, no, it's both, because just imagine yourself, Sharon. There are sometimes you'd like to tell your husband something, but you refuse to do, you stop yourself from doing that, or you would like to reach out and grab something, but you have the ability to regulate that behavior. The child who has attention deficit doesn't have as much of an ability to regulate that behavior. So first we want to look at it on that biological level. It certainly may affect the fact that they're putting their foot out. They have a desire to do all kinds of teasing, funny things, and children at that age often have a rather difficult sense of humor. And so they don't have the ability to restrain themselves as much as a child who doesn't have attention deficit. But there's also character issues, and we can bring character in to support a child who's suffering in another way. So if a child's having some biological weaknesses, we can provide character that'll strengthen and support them. So we'll look at that a little bit.
Let's move towards some solutions now. We've spent a lot of time looking at the problem, and I think we all have experienced the problem. We know what it feels like, and we know what it looks like. So let's talk about some solutions now. We want to approach these solutions from four different ways. First, we want to spend some time examining the parent's attitude. How are you feeling about this child? We want to maybe motivate you to actually look at your child in a different way. Next, we're going to, again, looking at mom and dad still, we're going to talk about six ways that you can develop a nurturing perspective on your child and in your home. Then we're going to talk about eight ways that you can turn your family environment into a helpful environment for your child. And then the fourth thing we're going to do is focus on a plan that will concentrate on some of those particularly tough problems that your child is experiencing.
We find that parents who have a child who's handicapped, that handicap may be a physical handicap, or it may be a emotional handicap or a social handicap, that those children, those parents, have to go through a grieving process in order for good bonding to take place. Bonding is that emotional tie, that closeness that a parent experiences with their child. That closeness is broken when a parent, often when a parent has expectations of what child rearing is going to be like, and then they find that they have a child who is handicapped in one way or another. Now, there are some handicaps that are very obvious. A severe handicap, that parent is forced to go through a process of grieving in order to come to a place of acceptance and bonding with that child. When a parent has a child who has attention deficit, that child is just normal enough so that the grieving process is often stalled or slowed down. But it's still important for a parent to go through a process of grieving to understand what's going on. The fact of the matter is that they grieve the loss of that normal, quote, normal child they thought they were going to have. They grieve the fact that their child isn't that bundle of joy and excitement that they thought that child was going to be. Their hopes for that child of being a friend and being close are instead substituted by the fact that they continually get bad reports from the babysitter, or grandparents are continually making critical remarks about the children, or the child is in continual conflict with other children, or disrespectful to mom and dad. And consequently, the parent then faces an internal crisis, a crisis of expectations. And that parent needs to be able to go through a grieving process that forces them to make a choice between their expectations of what they wanted in a child and what reality really is. The part of that grieving process is anger, and if you get stuck in the anger stage and you carry that on, that's going to end up doing more damage in your relationship with your child than cell phone.
The normal grieving process proceeds through several stages and ends up in a place of acceptance. This is an acceptance of who your child is just for who they are. And it puts aside those expectations that you had and just grabs onto your child and says, this is great. This is okay. I accept my child just the way they are, and you can feel good about that. That's where we go with the grieving process in the end. Expectations are put aside and the child is just accepted. When that parent comes to the point of acceptance, then they can have a more positive attitude toward their child, there can be a more positive atmosphere in the home, and the parent can feel more hopeful.
When the parent goes through this process of grieving, then, and they come to that place of acceptance, then they can start developing a more positive and hopeful attitude about their children.
This is the end of side one. Please turn the tape over and rewind to the beginning of side two to continue this conference. Don't you sometimes wonder what in the world is going on in the head of your child? It would be great if a child who is a challenged parent could just sit and talk about what's actually going on for them. Josh Taransky is 15 years old and in this tape speaks from his past experiences with ADD. As Josh shares his heart on this tape, you'll see that he believes children can be a difficult challenge, but he also realizes there are solutions. One of the solutions is for the parent to develop a winning attitude with their child.
Building character into your child is important, but the attitude you have about him or her is essential. John Maxwell is quoted in his book, The Winning Attitude, saying, "Your attitude determines your altitude." In the next few minutes, I'd like to give you a renewed vision for what your child could be. Most difficult kids have a negative character trait that outweighs the good. Maybe they have a problem with anger, where they're lashing out at other siblings. Or maybe they're continually impulsive, where they can't keep their hands to themselves. Whatever it is, it weighs heavily in your minds when you think of your child. Each one of you has an opinion of who your child is, and when you leave tonight, we'd like it to be a good one. James Weldon Johnson said, "Every race and every nation should be judged by the best it has produced, not by the worst." And that applies to your children as well. You as a parent need to be asking yourself the question, what handicaps my child? His attention deficit or the attitude towards the attention deficit? Sometimes parents find a problem with their child, and that problem becomes an unpassable obstacle. Others take the disability and make it an opportunity for growth. We believe that these difficult kids are kids with a dominant negative handicap, but they also have some very positive character qualities, which is a resource for them to succeed. Many leaders in the past have had a disability of some kind or another, but they overcame that disability to achieve greatness. Each one of your children have been blessed with the ability to achieve. But what gets in the way? Maybe a negative attitude towards them or a low self-esteem. We want to help you build your child's self-esteem through the attitude you have of him or her. To do that, we're going to take a look at a familiar story out of the Bible. The story of the parable son. Luke 15:11 tells the story of a young man who asked his father for his share of the inheritance. The father consented and gave the boy a large sum of wealth, but those riches didn't last long as he squandered it on foolish things. Having lost all and under great pressure from a famine, he went to work for a rancher. The rancher gave him the lowest job, probably seeing that he wouldn't be responsible with anything more. His job was to pork up the pigs. Well, the man liked his job and soon was right at home. In fact, he saw how much the pigs enjoyed the husks he fed them and started to crave a plate full of it, which brought him to a realization, and that's where I'll pick up in verse 20. So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his servants, "Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead but is alive. He was lost and is found." Picture this man with me. He has two sons. He's wealthy enough to give away half his riches, and that's enough riches to go pure partying for a year. Dreams are built into these children. He has expectations for them. And what happens? A son rebels, takes half of his riches, and deserts the family. The father must have been devastated. Imagine some of the emotions he must have felt. Anger, sadness, frustration, guilt, loss, a lot of disappointment. Parents of difficult children can most often relate to some of these emotions. Some of the emotions they go through are anger, sadness, frustration, guilt, loss, despair. I believe there are some key principles we can pull away from this parable, and I'm going to break them down into three parts: compassion, celebration, and hope. Let me start off in verse 20. You have this verse there in your notes. Under the word compassion, if you would like to follow along. So he got up and went to his father, but while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son and threw his arms around him. The word that stands out in the scripture is the word compassion. I'd like you to circle that word in your notes there. The word compassion means to feel sorrow for the sufferings or troubles of another or others, accompanied by an urge to help, deep sympathy. I really like that definition. It gives the picture, like my dad says, of oozing concern for the heart of another person. When it came to the father in this story, he was willing to show compassion. On that dusty road next to the field, an example was given of forgiveness and acceptance. Just picture this man with me, if you will. He was probably hunched over, pulling weeds away from the soil. The sun was hot. The muscles in his back were sore. Sweat glistened on his forehead as he looked up to the sound of a man pounding the ground with worn feet. He could barely make out the stranger, for his eyesight was weak. But as the figure drew closer, he could tell that he was limping and that he was tired. The flesh on his bones were worn. Something about the squared chin and the deep-set eyes caused him to wonder, could that be? No, my son is off, far away. But the man did resemble a child he once knew. Yes, it was his son, but not the one he had dreamed of, not the one he had so longed to see walk down that path. Oh, how could I have been given such a wretch, he thought. The thought of just turning away raced through his mind. My son deserves nothing more from me. But oh, how I just want to bring him back into my arms. I just want to hug him. A voice was deep in his soul crying out, love him, love him. But how can I, God? He must hate me. So the man looked again at the pitiful sight, like a dog coming home to its master. He could still love this failure, couldn't he? His feet started to move. He was running. Joy overwhelmed him as tears started to flow down his weathered cheeks. My son has come home. He's come home. The father embraced his son and wept. We get a beautiful picture of the inner struggle that parents face every day. I know that many of you can relate to this man. Maybe your child is continually making poor choices. Maybe your kids have just not lived up to your expectations. We, through this story, get a good picture of what it means to show compassion to a difficult child. When the father saw his son in the state he was in, he had two choices. One, love him, or two, be angry with him. Parents are continually faced with that same choice. Will you feel for your child, or will you respond to them in anger? Will you try to reason in your mind in their favor, or will you lash out? Let me say this on the behalf of those kids with ADD. Many of them wish that ADD was just something that flared up every once in a while. But the truth is that ADD is a continual struggle. That is why we need parents who are continually willing to show compassion. Compassion in this story meant the father was willing to pull his son out of his guilt and shame. He was willing to lower himself to his son's level. He was willing to admit that his son had a problem, but was also willing to lower himself and help his son. Compassion in the family means showing an oozing love for your child. It means when they can't sit still, you come over and you hold them on your lap. And it ultimately means reflecting Jesus' love in your life. There's a place at your bottom of your notes there. I'd like you to fill in one way you can show compassion to your child when you get home. Yes, you'll probably walk in the door and there will be that babysitter. She probably has that dazed look in her eyes. And when you ask her how it went, she'll say, oh, just great. And there will be your child and they'll be looking up to you with those big eyes. And that daddy, guess what I did, smile. And when you're thinking, how bad could it get? That's when you need to get down on your knees and you need to take them in your arms and you say, I love you. I love you for your smile, I love you for your craziness, and I love you for just being you. You see, I believe that compassion is an abnormal thing for people. It does not come naturally to show the compassion that you feel. Some people may be better at it than others, but overall, compassion is a difficult thing to do. But no matter how difficult it is worth learning how to do it and how to do it well. The second truth we can pull away from this story is in verse 22. Let me read it. But the father said to his servants, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. That's the word I want you to circle in your notes there. The word celebrate. This is my favorite part of the story because the father showed that he was not only a talker, but he was also a doer. We pick up where the father has just hugged his son. But the son still feels it necessary to go on with plan A. He says, "Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son." Can you hear the sorrow in that statement? Can't you just picture someone who knows they're nothing? How would I have responded to had I been the father? How do you respond to a complete failure? We quickly find out in the next few verses. The father said to the whole world, "I love my son, and I will prove it to you." Much attention has been given over the years to the subject of celebration. Many famous speakers have spoken on that subject. Those people such as Lucy Swindoll say, "Live it up, enjoy life, make the best of it." Now that's great, but what about kids with ADD? What about those difficult kids? The truth is that they don't get their opportunity to enjoy life because the pressure to do well is so hard. Often they are better losers than winners, just like the young man in the story. But look at the father. Look at how he responded to his son. He planned a time where only positive things were happening. The son had already experienced the bad, and now the father just wanted to give him a break from life. I really like this father and the approach he takes with his son. The father knew what the son needed at that very instant. His theory was that life needs more good than bad. Kids need this principle applied in their life. Often we as ADD kids have a good experience with losing, and what we need is more of an opportunity to win. When I was in Africa, the pressure to do well was difficult, and I had to work hard just to get B's in school. So I planned a time to play racquetball. I found that I enjoyed this sport, And I was also good at it. So I'd play people I knew I could beat. I was building my confidence level up. I was having fun. I was doing something I was good at. Kids need their thing they're good at. It may mean that they like to do Legos. Maybe they enjoy gardening. Whatever it is, it's your job as the parent to find what it takes to build that kid up. Now, this may mean some flexibility on your part, but what I'm saying here is a necessity. You might want to choose 1 hour out of the day where you're just going to have only positive input on your child's life. You're just going to encourage them and build them up. You say, "My kid's crazy. How could I get away with something like that?" Lock the doors, batten down the hatches, and tolerate them for an hour. You can make up for lost discipline time after that. But for that 1 hour, like it was said in The Taming of the Shrew, kill your kid with kindness. Overwhelm them with nothing. Your kids most likely will not come away from those hours better behaved, but they will come away with a renewed spirit, and a "we can win" attitude will be in their hearts. Difficult kids need to be celebrated. The father had a longing for his son to be alive. We see in verse 24 a statement that reveals the father's desire. "For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." So they began to celebrate. That's the word I'd like you to circle there. I'd like you to circle the word "alive." I'm hoping when you come back and you look at your notes, the word "alive" will remind you of the word "hope." We get a picture through this statement that the father hoped in his son. The definition of hope is a feeling that what is wanted will happen. Desire accompanied by expectation. A longing for completion in his son was so important to this father. I'm not talking about actions or words. I'm talking about a mindset that says, "I want my kid to be the best he can possibly be." Once you have that mindset, words and actions flow from it. You see, I believe that out of a desire for your kids to do well will grow an attitude of grace, encouragement, and understanding. Imagine with me what would happen if parents would do a little bit more hoping. What would happen if you as a parent longed for your kids to do well? Not many kids can hope in themselves when parents don't hope in them at all. Maybe the doubts still cloud your mind. Maybe you say, "I've already given up on my kids." Maybe even worse, you can remember the time you gave up on them. Maybe it was the time your son turned to the woman in the grocery store and, above all the crowd noise, said, "Look, Mom, she's cigaretting." Or maybe it was the time your daughter turned to the hairdresser and said, "You're ugly." Who could forget that? Not the hairdresser. Maybe you feel like you have too much to lose if you for one instant trust your son or daughter. But look at verse 12. Look what the son does out of the story. Number one, we see that the son does something very uncool for his days. He takes his share of the inheritance before the father dies. Number two, in verse 13, we see that he lived on the wild side, partying and being very immoral. And in verse 14, number four, we find out that he was not a wise partier or a thief because he spent all his money. He loses everything. He was a fool and he knew it. But let's read verse 20. In your mind, keep in mind where this guy is coming from. So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. Now, if that doesn't make you want to hope in your kids, I might just give up on you. Let me go out on a limb and say this, that if you can have the kind of hope this man had for your child, they will be able to overcome any disability they have. Parents, I've not lived long. Many things are new to me, as are the things I've spoken to you in the last 30 minutes. But I believe with my whole heart that if you can have compassion, celebration, and hope implanted into your daily interaction with your kids, they'll be changed for a lifetime.
This is the end of Side 2. For other resources of effective parenting, please call us at 1-800-771-8334. We would love to help make your parenting easier and more effective.